Isabella Summers is the co-founder of British indie rock band Florence and the Machine, and she delivers a gorgeous classical score in the Netflix movie Lady Chatterley's Lover. She's here today with us on Crew Call.
So tell me about segueing to film, you know, to composing, not just for film, for TV as well.
Oh my goodness.
And is Florence and the Machine on hold for a second?
No, not at all. I just dipped out of doing this tour because I came off the end of the last world tour in 2019, where I think you and I met before. And I wasn't technically going to get into doing television, but I a wonderful music supervisor, Mary Ramos, was like, Izza, I'd done a piece of music for a friend of mine, Sam Levinson, and he loved it so much he used it all the way through his movie, Assassination Nation. And so then she was the music supervisor, Mary, and she said, Hollywood needs you. You're a woman with all this cool factor. And she was like, I think you should do this. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to work with film and scoring, like always been a dream. Massive fan of John Barry from the early years, wanting to do kind of like super cool, sexy, dark, you know, music. So I always kind of had it in mind. And then here I was presented with an opportunity, not straight out of this tour, not to do a movie, but a TV show. And I was like, oh, shit, how does that work? And Mary's like, just come. I need you to come to Hollywood. We're going to figure it out. So and so that was it. I basically did Little Fires Everywhere with Mark Isham, who wonderfully co-piloted me and then showed me the ropes. And then I haven't stopped working since. And it's gone from TV to film. And now here we are with Lady Chatterley. It's my fourth movie, but my first movie out.
Well, this is a little different, but I will share with you one of my favorite Florence and the Machine songs used in a movie.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going with this?
Breath of Life?
No, Youth. You've Got the Love.
Oh, wow.
Did you see that movie? You did? The Paolo Sorrentino film?
I will.
Oh, it begins with it. It's a very, fuck. It takes place, it's very heavily influenced by Fellini. Which he is.
Okay.
And it takes place, it's a very deeply philosophical movie, and it takes place at an Italian
kind of spa. Right up my street.
Spa area. And the song just lightens up the tone of the movie. It just kicks off with I think it's a cover.
It is a cover.
I think it
is a cover. I remember
totally
recording
cover.
It in my studio. And it was funny. Yeah. It was like some random person's like throwaway idea. And then we kind of like throwaway recorded it. And then it throwaway became a massive smash. Really hilarious.
So here in Lady Chatterley's Lover, tell me about what a gorgeous classical score.
Thank you.
You know, this joy. The piano and joy and the enlightenment in the cue joy,
yes,
entitled Joy.
Thank you.
Is just mesmerizing. What were your inspirations here? What were your
you know,
as far as classical,
I've made
goes?
Quite a lot of first of all, I thank you because I wanted to sound intelligent. I wanted to sound musically intelligent. And from the very beginning of the conversations with the director, she was talking about Stravinsky and she was talking about Shostakovich and like people that I hadn't really heard of. And of course, as soon as you put on Rite of Spring, you're like, oh my God, I know exactly what this is. And then it became, you know, because for the most part, Connie's journey is that she's frustrated. And so she goes looking for love, essentially. And so like, you know, straight away with that, I was like, I ran all the way with it. And I had this kind of like, it was really the way Law was filming it was in a very sort of intimate, elegant way. So I was trying to mirror what I was doing. I would do these huge epic like pieces of music which had full orchestras in them for like them dancing in the rain, for example. And then she would be like, it's beautiful, but it's a bit too big. And then she would like find from all the millions of bits of music the kind of simplest like three chords that I'd played very delicately. And she was like, this is the sound of the movie. So we kind of like covered all the bases of the kind of like frustration and you know, her tempestuous nature with kind of listening to Beethoven and all that stuff. And then we got to a moment where it was like, well, the movie starts with a wedding. We're going to need something happy. It was like, damn, what can this be? And I listened to Gustav Holst. And I listened to Bring Her Joy and I was like, oh, I want something. I want the film to feel open, feeling like this. And then this feeling of joy can break down into like a kind of twisted version of what that is. So that's exactly what the opening of the movie is. And actually the piano that keeps going all the way through Reel One is thematic, if believe it or not. So it kind of like it twists like a little bit more each time.
Well, you're gonna love this. So this morning, while I'm listening to the score in the car, I'm driving one of my son's friends. He's also in the car with us to school, and we're listening to this. And he, of course, hasn't seen the movie, and I'm telling him he can't watch the movie because it's so,
how old is he?
He's 17, you can't watch the movie. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, I have to listen to this. I have to listen to this classical score. And he says, no problem. He plays piano. He says, absolutely no problem. And he's listening to it. And you know what he figured out? And he hadn't even seen the film. He says, she's in a void here. She's in a void. And then he would say, oh, she's troublesome. She's troubled.
Oh my God, I love him. Like,
oh my God. And the, you know, the kid hadn't seen the film. He's not even acquainted with the novel.
Oh my God, yes. And that is the power of music.
But isn't that amazing how he was able to pick that up?
Her headspace. I mean, thank you. Bravo. Yeah. Fucking yes. That is the power of music right there.
Yeah.
And like actually it was really fun making all the twisted stuff. And it was much harder to make the kind of like simple, loving thing and make it feel like different and each time and thematic. I made this kind of like tinkly piece of piano that happens at certain points. I won't give the game away. And then that was the kind of only moment we were able to make a kind of like big, loving. That's the bit I snuck in to make the ending of the movie. So like, I was like, come on, give me like one piece of big Hollywood romance. Like, you know, it's implied that they get together, but it's not set in stone. So like, I was like, I think I scored like 7 sweets at the end of the movie. And that was the what, like that. When it came to like figuring what that one was, I would then use that, break it down and bring it backwards.
Now, there's, of course, a number of intimate moments in the film. The initial, like the first two, I want to say, I noticed there wasn't any score, and I wanted to ask, was that deliberate? Did the scenes need to earn their music? Like, was that a discussion with you and the filmmaker where it was like, no, not now. We're not going to put score in now. And once you get to like the forest, for example, the forest interlude,
then there's some fire. Then we put fire in.
And then of course when they're dancing in the rain, was that a deliberate choice?
100%. I don't think that she and I specifically spoke about that initially, but as the picture was unfolding, you know, and settling and coming in, like it was so powerful. I was like, I don't know what I can do to add to this. It's already doing all the things. So like the decision was to kind of like leave it alone. Just leave it. It didn't need it. It was the most beautiful filmmaking. And then, but lead us into it and take us out of it, especially in those first two moments where, like, if you've seen it, you'll know what I'm talking about. And then when it came to the scene in the forest, I had scored, I think, all the way through that, like, quite early on. And I think somewhere along the line, it was like, it just doesn't need it. So we kind of like, and like, it was kind of an accident, that piece of score, because I was like messing around with the idea of synths, because I was like, I don't want it to just be classical. And she, and Laura Clermont was like, she really wanted electric guitar. So like from the very beginning, I was like messing around with guitar feedback for like a classical drama. And like, we were definitely trying not to make it sound like Downton Abbey. So when it came to this like sexy forest thing where it's super aggressive and like kind of he takes control and leads it through the woods. And it was just like, it was kind of sexy and dangerous. And I was like messing around with these sounds. Then I put these three chords in, da, 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 and it feels like it's going to kick off, da, da, da. And as I wrote those chords to that moment where they start kissing, I was like, I think this is the best moment in cinema history ever. And then take it away. And then I was like, oh, maybe it doesn't need to keep going. Like, it's just gives you that feeling of like, oh my God. And then they just get into it and that's it. They take it away. And like, I think to my surprise, it just got left in. I was like, oh my God, yes.
Now, were you classically trained early on?
I was actually. I had piano lessons with an amazing piano teacher called Elizabeth Donovan. I only got up to grade 5, but she did teach me very solid foundations, and it's all about putting chords together. So like, obviously I gave that up when I took up boys when I was like 14 and then got back into it later on, and then have realized that I've had this, you know, great foundation that, you know, if you can play the chords on a piano now in MIDI, you can play it on anything. But I also have, it was really fun, like, you know, I have lots of friends who are incredible players, and like, you know, lots of boys with beautiful instruments that they don't own, turns out. And they come here and they play for like all of the orchestras in London, and they'll come and you know, I'll play them something. A lot of the early iterations of stuff was me just in my front room with a violin player, and they would just
riff. You would jam. And you would just, the two of you would just riff to find.
I would like have something written, like that would be a bare bones. And then, they'd just do what they do. And like, some of that was really helpful. And also, like, I mean, I think I got really overexcited about the idea of like, what, you know, breaking down what Stravinsky actually would sound like, and like what, you know, what is in his scores. But I mean, I didn't actually use any of that stuff, but it was like a fascinating process of like learning how the greats break their things down, you know, what I mean.
And you also had to write a jazz piece.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. I mean, that was that, you know, like in the course of this thick classical
music. Yeah, all the music in that whole movie is me, which is hilarious. The jazz, I mean, it's just like, I think if you can find a groove with jazz, as I've now learned, like I remember when I did The Offer, I was like, oh my God, they want jazz. How am I going to, what? That's not in my musical vocabulary. And then like after a while of fumbling around with like, you know, a drum groove and a bass line, everything else can kind of fit in. So like, I don't know, it's such an amazing art form being able to be a composer, because you can really like, it's so nice to jump into somebody else's entire new world. And that's what was really nice about Shatley, because I wouldn't necessarily have put myself doing a period drama, but here I was presented with the opportunity, and it was like, okay, how do we make the sound of 1920s without it being too on the nose or too twee, or like, you know, just trying to make it feel fresh. So hopefully we nailed some of that. I snuck some synths in.
Now, how long did it take to compose the score? Did you have the full film in front of you?
No, actually, Law brought me in from the Rushes, which was amazing. So I got to see her saying cut and then resetting the scene. And then she would send me assemblies of like sequences that she knew was going to need score. So it was kind of like, it was an amazing like first journey into like real filmmaking, because it's not like that when you do TV. You get the episode, it's got a locked picture. You know, they sort of like set guidelines for you and get it done. Whereas this was very much like, here is a feeling. Now do the feeling.
And you're syncing it. I would imagine you're syncing this against the script.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, I mean, were there spotting sessions where you said...
We did one spotting session. And that was quite early on. And the picture did change quite a lot from that moment. But actually, I just kept making more music. She'd be like, Izza, I need more music. And then I'd go away and just spend 2 days writing music, and not necessarily even to picture, but like of a mood or a feeling. So like actually when it came to like, quick, we got to get this done. There was 7 hours of music to choose from. And I keep finding more bits in my computer going like, oh my God, this is so good. Why didn't we use that? We can use that for something else. So it was kind of like, you know, awesome. And then sad that I couldn't use the 7 suites that I'd written for the end of the film. You know what I mean?
Now is, are you, what's next for you?
Oh my goodness. I am scoring a television show, a cartoon, 2 movies right now.
You can't tell us what that is.
I think I can. I'm doing Lisa Frankenstein with Zelda Williams, who is Robin Williams' daughter.
Great.
For Focus Features. I'm doing a cartoon for Dan Harmon and Nathan Pyle called Strange Planet. I'm not sure if I can tell you about the other 2. But they're really good. Everything I'm doing is so cool.
And then what about Florence and the Machine? Will we see them again?
I think, well, Florence just broke her foot. She was on tour. But yes, I think, you know, let's put a pin in where it went. But I think she and I are like sisters. So it's going to come back around.
Izabella Summers, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Anthony.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.